Well, I don't use that phrase, an experience of Jesus. Americans want a personal relationship with Jesus, which I think is about the last thing I would want. I don't have a personal relationship with Jesus. I have a Jesus that comes to me through word and sacrament that makes it possible for me to be part of a people who can say to the world, you need salvation, and we're it. So the Christological center of how I think is correlative of an ecclesiological center. And I think what I'm saying is so obvious that it's not clear to me why people think it's controversial, because it seems to me what's been at the heart of the gospel from the beginning.
But you don't feel a personal connection, a personal relationship when you read Jesus and study the life? And like, is it possible to love a community if you don't love or have some kind of relationship with the person you say is at the center of it? I mean, Jesus just wasn't the Christ. He was Jesus as well.
Well, I have a very close relationship with many of the people that I go to church with who mediate Jesus to me. So I have that personal relationship that I just worry a little about calling it personal. It's a reality that certainly has made my life dysfunctional. And I want to make other people's lives dysfunctional.
Just explain that to me, please.
Well,
which reality has made your life dysfunctional?
Jesus. I mean, just think about how dysfunctional the Jesuits are around this place. I mean, what are they doing? To be set aside to do nothing but study and to say Mass. They're dysfunctional people. Like, I'm a dysfunctional. I'm an academic. I suppose it's a kind of way of saying, isn't it wonderful we're not normal?
Again, you're using words in an interesting way, because the way you use them is not the way people in ordinary discourse. When you say dysfunction, I think of not normal, but yeah, really not well. Or when you say personal, I think you take another take. Do you do that to disrupt and to make people think?
I do it because that's the way I think, because working with words is what I do. I have a book that came out in the last few years called The Work of Theology, and another book called Working with Words. And in Working with Words, I have the phrase, faith is working with words in the light of Christ. Well, that is already a misleading way to put it, because it makes it sound like faith is something other than words. But faith is words too. So learning how to talk has everything to do with being a follower of Christ.
And it's interesting, because there's a whole movement at the moment, a sort of a re-engagement with the apophatic tradition, that's saying, you know, words are really dangerous and give up on it, because once you put a word on the topic you're talking about, and on God, G-D, you're already distorting the reality.
They love to use that quote from Francis, preach and when necessary use words. Well, that's using words, and I think the way to think about the apophatic way is silence drips off the edges of words. So you only know what it is you don't know by having tested what you know.
That leads me on to Brian Brock, you're here, and to your book, which is interesting because it's called Beginnings, and maybe that process is how this works. So you talked, it was a conversation over 2 years with your friend. Tell me about that process then, because that sounds like a good description of doing theology that you've just spoken about.
Yes, my main interest was really to let people see how theology gets done. So there was a pedagogical impulse behind it. People often experience a figure as dominant as Stanley through a corpus, and because the corpus is so big, there's become canonical interpretations, which I often found very short-sighted and falsifying. So I thought, this is my chance. Let me both get Stanley to step out from behind that screen of secondary readings to show the subtlety, not least of language use that you've just displayed so ably, but also to show where theology comes from. I mean, we're always interacting with other voices to produce theological insight, but the way theology is typically presented in a lecture or in a book is a collation of quote-unquote results, and that obscures the thing that we need to be handing on to the next generation, is where does the theologizing actually happen and how does that look?
That's a hopeful process, because it could mean that even in the interview we were doing, that's a theologizing, because sure, new insights are coming and there's lots of roads that open up that you can go down. Is that what you experienced as well for yourself, for your own reflection and with Stanley?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, theology is just making sure that the language of faith, the basic creed, still talks to the world that we live in. Therefore, it can never end. It always has to be reintegrated with common language, and it has to question common language. And we have to see when we confess God as the creator, what does that connect to? Like, what specifically does that connect to? Stanley has been so important in showing how that might be done that I think it's a shame for that not to be distilled in a way that can allow next generations to repeat it without repeating Stanley.
How did you experience the process, Stanley?
I experienced it as a great gift, because to have someone like Brian read you and read you so well is a wonderful thing, because it doesn't happen a lot. So it was a gift, and it was a hell of a lot of darn hard work, because Brian did the work of reading me, and I had to do the work of responding to some very hard questions that I would prefer to leave vague, but Brian didn't let me. I'm sure there's some vagueness, and vagueness isn't always a bad thing, but I had to be clearer than oftentimes I wanted to be. So it was a great process, and I learned a lot.
What did you learn? I was going to ask you that. Was there something that surprised you and you said, oh, I didn't think that, or that's new for me?
Yeah, it's usually a connection between phrases that I hadn't thought of as being connected. For example, how to think about the implications of the care of the mentally handicapped for the explication of what it means to live peaceably. I'd thought of that before, but not as fully as I did for Brian pressing me on it. So those were the kinds of connections I was.
And can you just say a wee bit about that? Because I know you're one of the first theologians to write about disability and theology. A little bit about that.
It's really tricky, because you don't want to, quote, use the disabled to coerce people into positions that they prefer not to have. But I was fortunate enough, when I lived in South Bend, to be drawn into the world of the mentally disabled in a manner that I was able to make friends with many of those that we call disabled. And that opened up a world that enabled me to see that these people represent a challenge to the presumptions of modernity that we dare not miss. So that was how I got into it.
And just, did your notion of language then, was that, and the importance of words, was that challenged or expanded in terms of the dialogue that takes place with people who have mental disability?
There are many ways to carry on a conversation. Watch your hands. And the assumption that the mentally disabled can't communicate, I think, is because we haven't taken the time to listen.
I wasn't making that assumption. I was more thinking about your emphasis on the importance of words.
Yeah, but that's what I meant, that a gesture is a word, okay. Oftentimes, right?
Okay.
I had a student named Benita Rainey, who was a social worker for protective services working with the mentally disabled. And one of our wards was a young African-American, he must have been about 12, who was profoundly disabled and spent most of his life on a beanbag. You would think that he couldn't communicate, but going on rounds with Bonnie, she would come in and say, "Boys," and she would put her hand on his cheek like this, and he would just brighten up. He knew who she was, and That's communication.
I want to let you go because I know you've just come off an aeroplane and I'm sure you're tired. A final question then for you, because I'm really interested in this whole area that you spoke about, communication and word. Do you trust words?
Do I trust words? You have to trust words, but you sure better mistrust a lot of people that use them.